Good morning, everybody. Good to be with you today. Really miss being with you on Wednesday. I'm glad that we can have this chance to be together and focus on God before we have to go home and batten down the hatches once again and have storm number two. Hopefully it won't be as bad as it was last week. Y'all keep assuring me that this is not normal for the area. I'm taking your word for that. I'm really hoping that's the case. I was wondering at the beginning of last month, will we ever get snow? You know, people always talk about the snow of New England, and we sure got it. So it's good to be with you today. Go ahead and turn your Bibles, if you haven't done so already, to Timothy and Titus. We're going to be looking in that area of the Bible today pretty closely. If you are visiting with us, I want to echo what Dennis said at the beginning of the service. We are very glad that you are with us. We do want you to know that today we're in the middle of a family discussion. We're in the middle of studying the subject of church leaders. We're talking about, we've been talking for the last several weeks about the role of a shepherd, generally speaking, and the role last week of a sheep who's supposed to follow shepherds in a congregation. So today, we're going to get more detailed and more specific and kind of zoom in and look more closely at the role, or rather the qualities of a shepherd from Timothy and Titus. And when we go through this process, it's really important for us to remember that we're not just looking toward other guys that we could appoint to this position. We're also looking inwardly toward ourselves. All of us, as we look at these qualities, should be thinking, how does this apply to me personally? How can I become a better Christian? Because many of these things, not all of them, but many of these qualities are supposed to be inside of all Christians, not just elders. And I know that when studying these things for myself, I'm nowhere even close to being an elder. But there are so many of these qualities that challenge me and demand that I really improve my spiritual life in some very particular areas. So I hope this is a helpful study for you personally, as well as helping us to understand who our elders should be. So this morning, this is a two-part lesson. We're going to do the next part next week, God willing. And we're going to be dividing up these qualities into about five different categories. We're just going to look at one category today. We'll look at the other four, hopefully, next week. Everything that we have to talk about today falls under the category of general character qualities and general habits of a man who wants to be an elder. But before we get into those things, I've got some general ideas, general thoughts to put before you as we go into these passages. And the first one is this, that the main point that never needs to be lost when we get down into the nitty-gritty character qualities of all these things, the main point of all of this is the guy has to be above reproach. That is what is emphasized in Timothy and Titus. Especially look at Titus chapter 1 in verse 6, where he says, if anyone is above reproach, notice that is at the very beginning of the list. And then in verse 7, for an overseer, that very next verse, as God's steward, must be above reproach. You know, if you didn't catch it once, he's going to hit you with it again. If you're reading Titus 1, he's going to do that in Timothy 2. Hit us with that point. That is the main point. And that word, there's one word in the Greek that we translate as above reproach. And basically, it's the idea of blamelessness. So what does it mean for a man to be blameless or above reproach? It doesn't mean he's perfect. It doesn't mean he doesn't have sins in his past that he's dealt with, because if that was the case, the Apostle Peter never would have been an elder. But we know that from 1 Peter 5, he's an elder serving as a shepherd of a church. Can you just imagine how when his name was being brought forward in his congregation, can you imagine some people standing up and saying, wait a minute,
Peter can't be an elder. Because I remember when, back when our Lord was alive, he cursed and he swore that he didn't even know Jesus. And now he's going to lead one of Jesus's churches? Or I remember when, back in Antioch, he wouldn't even sit with the Gentiles. And he withdrew from them, and Paul had to argue with him and set him on the right course again. Peter can't be an elder. Well, but Peter could be an elder. Jesus was happy with that. From 1 Peter 5, we see he's serving well as a shepherd, because blamelessness does not mean perfection. It means the general course and direction of his life is centered on Jesus. It means that we're looking for life patterns when we look at whether somebody is blameless or above reproach or not. It doesn't mean, I remember 15 years ago when he lost his temper with me, or he did this, or he did that. Blamelessness is not that at all. So we need to ask ourselves, when we're looking at a man, do the qualities mentioned in Titus and Timothy sum up his character? Is this basically who this man is? Or are they out of character for him? Okay, and something else we need to realize when we get into Titus and Timothy is that these lists, they're not identical, and they're definitely not exhaustive. They're not identical because, you know, 1 Timothy, when you go over there, Paul will mention when he writes 1 Timothy that an elder cannot be a recent convert, and he's got to have a good reputation with those on the outside of the church. That's not mentioned at all in Titus. And they're not exhaustive lists, because you think about how, an elder, for example, needs to be displaying the fruits of the Spirit, right? That Paul talks about in Galatians, love, joy, peace, all those things. You notice the fruits of the Spirit are not in the lists of Timothy and Titus in that kind of a way, but he still needs to have them. So these lists are supposed to be ways of helping us understand what kind of a man we're looking for. They're not supposed to be approached with a wooden checklist mentality. Well, is he this? Okay, is he that? Okay, is he that? He's got to have all these things. But we got to approach these lists in the right kind of a way. And also, when we're looking at these character qualities, these are not suggestions. These are not, well, he should have these things, or he's working on these things, and he's gonna get them one day down the road. No, when you look at these carefully, you notice that Paul says an overseer must be. In other words, he's got to have these qualities locked into his character before he gets put into this position. It's really important to understand. Not that, well, he's kind of sort of self-controlled he must be these things. You see that, just to show you I'm not lying, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2, therefore an overseer must be above reproach. And there are other must-bes kind of scattered in this section. So obviously, again, the man is not going to be perfect. He's not going to be sinless. But he needs to show that he's got some mastery over these things. He's got to show that he's got a grasp on what these qualities are. And he's generally showing them in his life. Not that he's never going to mess up, but he must be these things in his life. And also, I just want to point out this that may seem a little obvious, but I think it's an important point that I think it's pretty likely that Timothy and Titus, these young evangelists, they didn't have both of these lists. So what we are going to do in these lessons is sort of take them both and combine them, but it's important to understand that Timothy didn't have Titus's and Titus's didn't have Timothy's letter, but they would have appointed the same kind of man, because again, these lists are not exhaustive and they're not meant to be approached with a checklist mentality. It's just supposed to be indicators of this idea of blamelessness. Okay, let's get into the qualities. We've got a lot to cover, so let's go ahead and get started. 1 Timothy chapter 3 in verse 2, talking about his character and habits. He's got to be, verse 2, therefore an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, sober-minded. That literally means being restrained in conduct. An elder has to be a guy who doesn't let it all hang out, if you will. You know, he is controlled, but that doesn't mean that he never tells a joke. That doesn't mean that he is the most boring guy in the room. That doesn't mean that he never laughs, that he doesn't have a good sense of humor. It just means that he knows how to rein himself in. He knows how to tone it down in the appropriate circumstances. He's not just bouncing off the walls all the time. He's got some control about his life and his character. He's not frivolous. He's not flippant. He's not that kind of a person. And that goes along with what else it says in Timothy and Titus 1. He's got to be self-controlled. He's got to be sober, of sound mind, being in control of oneself. In the King James, if you're using the King James, it'll say vigilant. You know, basically somebody who's always watching. You know, if you want to put a man over a large body of people, you want to make sure he knows how to keep an eye on himself. If he's going to be responsible for watching over other people in their lives, if he doesn't know how to watch himself, how is he going to do that for other Christians? Well, he's not. So this is a very big thing that he's got to be able to do. In 1 Timothy 3, in verse 2, we read that he's got to be respectable, right after self-controlled, which basically means decorous in the Greek, or well-ordered. He's got to be somebody who's generally on top of things. You know, when we're looking at somebody and asking, is this man qualified? We've got to ask this question, is he generally on top of his life? Does he have a well-ordered life? When he makes commitments, does he keep them? Or does he kind of lose track of things? Does he let things slip through the cracks? Again, think about this. If you're appointing a man over a group of Christians, you want to make sure he's not going to let people slip through the cracks. Or people's needs in the flock slip through the cracks. But if he's doing that a lot in his life, then there's a good chance that that's going to happen when he's over other people in their lives. So what he is in himself, he's going to be that way when he's put in this position over other Christians. And is he the kind of guy that when you give something to him, you don't have to worry about it anymore? You don't have to check up on him. You know he's going to get it done. Or not. That is wrapped up in the idea of being respectable here. All right, in 1 Timothy 3, verse 2, Titus 1, verse 8, he's got to be hospitable. It's got to be one of his habits, one of his character qualities. In other words, he's got to be a lover of strangers, is what that literally means in the Greek. He's got to be fond of guests. You know, he's got to be a man who makes strangers feel comfortable. A man who has people into his home, into his personal space, and gives them what they need, shares his heart, shares his time, shares his things among them, with them. You know, and another thing, when visitors come amongst us, we need to watch and see whether the men we're thinking about, whether they're qualified or not, are making those visitors feel comfortable or not. When there's a new family among us who's just joined our group, how does the man treat this family? Does he welcome them? Is he warm? Is he friendly? Or is he standoffish? What about people in this group, in this congregation, who are a little harder to get to know, who are not as out there as some of us are in our personalities? Does this man find ways of getting to know them? in their lives? Or is he just basically hanging out with his friends and the people he's comfortable with? All that's wrapped up in the idea of hospitable. All right, and he's got to not be a drunk person. You see that in 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1. Drunkard means given to drinking too much wine. And I want us to think about this for a second. It's easy for us to sort of pass this one over and say, well, he's got to not touch wine, you know, like the drunk down the street. But there's a deeper principle that the Bible is trying to get at here when it's talking about not being a drunkard. And that is, this man does not allow himself to be controlled by anything that's going to affect and alter his judgment and his ability to make good decisions. Because that's what being a drunkard unfortunately does to us. It warps our reality and it prevents us from living productively. It doesn't cause us to be self-controlled. It doesn't cause us to be vigilant, watchful, which are all things that an elder's got to be if he's going to be in this position. So if you're thinking of a guy and the phrase party animal comes to your mind when you think about that guy, he's probably not going to be the sort of person you want to put in the eldership. And there's something else about this too. You know, a person who gets drunk, what they like to do is escape reality, right? A person who goes out and drinks a whole lot of alcohol is wanting to escape what they're doing in their life right now. So is that the sort of person you want in the shepherd position? A man who likes to get a pleasure drug to escape from reality? Absolutely not, because you want him to meet all of us in our realities, where we are in our lives, and if problems come up, if the first thing he does is try to escape reality and bury his head in the sand, that's not the kind of leader you want leading God's people. He's got to be somebody who will face reality, not escape from it. But a person who's drunk is not going to be pursuing sheep. He's going to be pursuing drink. He's going to be pursuing escape. All right, and it's got to be a man who's not violent. 1 Timothy 3, verse 3, Titus 1, verse 7, both mention this. He's a man who's not violent, and that word violent means a striker or a bully. It's kind of an interesting word. An elder cannot just go around giving people black eyes in the face. So he can't physically be beaten up on people. But again, I think there's a deeper principle at work here. He can't be somebody who goes around trying to intimidate other people into following what he wants to do. And again, an elder has authority. God-given authority to rule and shepherd a flock, but he can't be ruling in this kind of a way. He can't be a bully. He can't try to go around intimidating and forcing other people into submission. He's not going to go rampaging around, yelling, kicking, and screaming, and throwing a fit until he gets his way. That's something two-year-olds do. That is not something that shepherds do, if they're qualified men. So this is something we need to think about. Verse 3 of 1 Timothy 3 also mentions, kind of along these lines, he's got to be a gentle guy. Or the word could also be translated patient, kind, courteous, or tolerant. Basically, it's a man who's not rough. It's a man who's not insensitive about people and about things and about life. He's not going to be a man who's just stomping around like a bull in a china shop. He is not going to be hitting people with 2x4s. He's a gentle guy, which means that he's going to be approachable. If you've got a little bit different perspective on something in the Bible, it means you can go to this man and you can have a discussion with him without him getting immediately frustrated and snippy and argumentative and trying to beat you up about what he believes the Bible says. It's somebody that you're going to be able to have a discussion with, that you're going to be able to take your problems to, and trust that he's not going to wail on you. Well, how come you don't have that figured out by now? I mean, you ought to know that. Christians ought to be aware of this. How do you not know that? He's a gentle man. Patient. Kind. He's also not quarrelsome. Again, you see all these qualities kind of bleed into each other, kind of overlap each other in some ways. He cannot be quarrelsome. He can't be disposed to fight. He's not a brawler. You ever know somebody who just loves any chance they can get to get in a verbal argument with somebody else? And they try as hard as they can, it seems like, to turn a conversation into an argument. And you've got one opinion, and then they say, "Oh, no, well, it's this way. It's not that way, you silly person, you." He can't be an argumentative kind of a person. He needs to be able to stand on the truth no matter what comes his way and rebuke people who need that. But it doesn't mean that he goes around looking to pick fights. He lets the fights come to him, and if he needs to fight, he will, for the right things. But it's never personal, and it's never something that he does because he enjoys it. He can't be somebody like that. And he can't be, in 1 Timothy 3, verse 3, he cannot be a lover of money. As part of his habits, he cannot be greedy or fond of money, in different ways of translating that. He can't be somebody who is pursuing toys, pursuing riches, pursuing wealth. Because again, this is kind of like being a drunkard. If he's pursuing this, he's not going to be pursuing us, the sheep, the people who he needs to be pursuing and helping and shepherding. But this kind of raises a question in my mind when I read this. How can you tell whether somebody is a lover of money or not? Because most of us don't have "I'm not" or "I am a lover of money" written all over our foreheads. So how do you look at some man and tell whether or not they fit this or don't fit this? Is it do we look at how much they work? I don't think so, because a lot of us, I know, work very hard in our jobs, and you're not necessarily lovers of money. I know my father, when I was growing up, worked extremely hard in his job, still does. And I know my dad, and I know he's not this, a lover of money. So, but how can we tell? Well, we need to look at someone when they're in a crisis. This might be one way of telling. When they got a really bad day and they have to spend a whole lot of money to fix it, does it ruin their day? Does it ruin their month, their year? Are they always complaining about that and talking about how much they had to give away in order to fix this or that or something else? When the stock market has a really bad day, is that their number one topic of conversation for the next who knows how long? Does he have the right perspective when he talks about people and he classifies them and he says, "Well, this person, and they've got this great car and they've got this great house and they live high on the hog and they've got this much money"? Is that the way he talks about people in terms of how much they have? Now, all these things might help us as we're thinking about whether somebody is a lover of money or not. He's also, according to Titus chapter 1, verse 7, he's got to be a guy who is not arrogant, not self-willed or self-pleasing. Remember, a man who is a shepherd has to be able to stand on the truth and to fight for what Jesus has said in his word, but he's got to be a man who is able to be wrong. You ever notice that arrogant people are never, ever wrong? Ever. It's always you. It's always something else that they can say when you say, "Okay, well, look at this. Please understand, you know, this doesn't work. No, no, no. It's, I mean, you're not looking at it right. They're always right. An elder, a shepherd, has to be willing to be wrong sometimes. Because again, I mean, he's supposed to have all these character qualities, but the man is not going to be perfect. He's got to be able to listen when other people go to him and say, we're concerned about this, or we're concerned about that. Is an elder, or the, a man that we're thinking about, is he a it's my way or the highway kind of guy? That nothing you can say is going to change my mind or convince me that I'm looking at this in a skewed way. It's always you who needs to correct your attitude and your mindset. Is he that kind of a person? He cannot be arrogant. He can't be quick-tempered, Titus 1, verse 7, or soon angry, or another translation is irascible. Kind of like that word, irascible. You think about when God gets angry. God takes a very long time to get mad. You notice that? How he always presents himself as long-suffering, slow to anger, and we're supposed to imitate that. God did get very angry with the Israelites throughout the ages. But he, you know, how many years was it before he finally pulled the plug on Israel and Judah? Hundreds, hundreds of years. He waited and impatiently longed for them to come up. This man has to be like that. It has to take a lot to get an elder or a shepherd to lose his cool with somebody and to display flashes of anger at somebody else. It's because God is like that. And this man is representing God as a shepherd. He cannot allow people to push his buttons because an elder is gonna have his buttons pushed. I'm not one, but I've worked with elders before in Arkansas. I've worked with these guys here. I know they get their buttons pushed and they cannot react in such a way that they lose their temper in a way that does not glorify God. He has to be able to take that. And Titus chapter 1, verse 8 means he's got to be a lover of good or a promoter of virtue. An elder has to be somebody who celebrates good things. When the people in his flock are doing good, he's got to see that and he's got to celebrate that and say, that's wonderful, that's a good job. I'm so happy for you in your life. It's pretty much the opposite of 2 Timothy chapter 3. Notice there, in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 3, where Paul says in verse 1, in the last days, there will come times of difficulty. People will be pretty much the opposite of shepherds. Lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal. Notice the end, not loving good. Elder has to love good. And that's going to affect what he chooses to entertain his mind with. It's going to affect his interactions with other Christians. It's going to affect how he talks to people in the world. It's going to affect everything about his life. It's something we need to be looking for. All right, Titus 1, verse 8 also mentions he's got to be upright, or just, or equitable, or fair. He's got to be somebody who loves being just, fair, and right, because he's making judgment calls about people. He's got to have a sense of justice about him. He's not going to be somebody who takes sides in a matter before he fully understands the issues, before he's heard everybody out, before he's understood what's going on. He's not going to be somebody who is swayed by a flood of opinions. He's going to sift it all through the biblical text before he makes a judgment call. He's not going to be, you know, pulled over by brother so-and-so and said, hey, you need to think this way. Oh, okay, I'll think that way. He's going to be somebody who's just, who's fair. Titus 1, verse 8, he's going to be a man who's holy, or pious. You translate that, devout, sanctified, hallowed, pure. He's going to be devout in his attitude, but also in his actions. He's not going to be somebody who just does the bare minimum to get by for Jesus. When he comes here to worship with us and sing and think about God, he's not going to do it because that's what he grew up doing, or that's because he knows that's what's expected. You know, a shepherd is going to be there at worship services, so I'm going to go. No, he's going to be a man who does it because he enjoys being with God's people. He's going to read this book every day, not because it's expected, but because he loves soaking in these words. He's going to talk to other people about God, not because it's expected, but because he wants to share the gospel as far and as wide as he possibly can. He's going to be the kind of man who sets himself apart from the world. And he's going to be disciplined. You see that? Titus chapter 1, again, in the same verse, in verse 8. He's going to be temperate, which talks about, which is referring to somebody's emotions and their impulses. And he's going to keep his desires in check. He's not going to lose control. Proverbs chapter 29, in verse 11. I'm going to leave you with this verse. Proverbs 29, verse 11 says, a fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. Notice how that verse didn't say, a fool gives full vent to his spirit in public, but when he gets home, then he lets it all hang loose, and he lets it all out. No, a man, a disciplined man, a temperate man, never, ever allows himself to let those foolish ideas and feelings escape his mind. He's going to rein everything under the control of Jesus Christ, his true shepherd. And so we have a lot more to say about who a shepherd is. This is just scraping the surface of him and his qualities. We will finish that up next week. I appreciate your time and your good attention and your thoughtfulness about these really important subjects. And I want to end with the invitation that Jesus gives all of us, that if you need to come to him and you need to turn your life over to him to be your shepherd, Psalm 23 tells us that there's no better shepherd than God, and that God can lead us by quiet streams, good pastures that we can lie down in and be satisfied in. And so if you want that for your soul, I would strongly recommend that you turn your life over to this shepherd, and that you obey his call to confess who he is and to repent of the sins that you have been living in, and to relinquish those and put those behind you and be baptized, as we talked about today in our First Peter class, so that you can appeal to him to give you a good conscience, so that you cannot be worried about what you've done before. Or if you need to come back to your shepherd, let us know how we can serve you, how we can help you, as together we stand up and sing the invitation song.